folks. It has been one of the busiest pre-shows.
It has. It definitely has.
I think we've done. Yeah, I've got half of a space shuttle program installed outside in preparation of the first ever live musical performance on an episode of Ask an Atheist, and you are listening to Ask an Atheist. 253-584-1480. Give us a call if you got one in ya. We're talking about music today. It's me, Sam, as usual. With me is Becky. How are you?
I am fantastic.
And joining us from Australia and on her national U.S. tour, Shelley Siegel. How are you?
G'day. Good, thanks, Sam. And Becky, thanks for having me.
Oh, boy. So if you haven't heard already, and I'd be really surprised if you hadn't, we have, after this, our post-show is going to be a little bit different. It's instead of our usual get-together, drinks, and conversation, we're still doing that, of course.
Yes,
but there's also
there will be drinks, food, and conversation.
Oh, yes. Oh, there will also be music from Shelley Siegel at Doyle's Public House. That's in downtown Tacoma. If you don't know where it is, there's something wrong with you. you'll notice that that's in a different location from where it was originally. Last week, at this time, we originally announced that it was going to be at Anthem. Tea and coffee here, also in Tacoma, but at the last minute they pulled out and they said they couldn't do it, mainly because they didn't agree with us. They didn't agree with the message of Ask an Atheist or the message of Shelley Siegel.
It was really kind of disappointing to hear that. Sorry, we can't support you because your show would not align with our beliefs.
Yeah. So, has this happened to you before? Or?
No, this is the first time I've ever experienced anything like this. I mean, definitely there's venues that have taken some issue, but they've been frank and upfront about that before we've kind of gone on to make arrangements.
Yeah.
Which is different to what's happened in this situation where you guys had already kind of made a contract of sorts with
right.
the venue, and then they've canceled at the last minute.
Yeah, we've got a thing that we do. I mean, when we go in and do a venue, we've been told no before, and I try to be very clear right at the outset. My show is called Ask an Atheist. Our show is about skepticism, atheism, the separation of church and state. We're going to have some folks in. This is what it's going to be like, and we try to give them a chance to say no without having to say no to the ideology, because frankly, if they don't want us there, I don't want to be there, is what it comes down to. Laws, legality laws aside, I don't want to be where we're not welcome. And they made it clear to us right at the outset that they were into it. This is not, you know, they didn't say anything about whether or not they were, you know, what their beliefs were, but they said that this is definitely something that they would do.
It was nothing but positive interaction. We're very happy. We'd be pleased to do this. This is exactly the kind of venue that we've been looking, you know, this is the kind of thing that our venue really serves. We've had private parties. We've had performances. It's great. It's set up for a singer-songwriter. Yes, of course, we'd love to have you.
And once again, if you've been to the blog at askanatheist.tv, I document this in detail. Last Monday, the day after the show, we received an email from the venue saying that they didn't stand for or believe in what we were working on. And they had CC'd somebody at Eternity Bible College in that email who we hadn't been in contact with before. And 6 days before the event, we were out of it. We were out. We had nowhere to be.
Yeah. Someone can say, we're sorry, however, this may inconvenience you, but you're acknowledging, yes, this is incredibly inconvenient and also,
and frankly
discriminatory.
When I book a show in Tacoma, I usually work up months out because tracking down a venue who understands who we are, understands what the event is about, who it's for, this is not something people are used to here in Tacoma. So I usually do this several weeks in advance, or sometimes months in advance. Now I had 6 days to do it, so I had to hit the pavement pretty hard. And frankly, I didn't have to hit it that hard, because it turns out that a friend of the show and a friend of mine, you know, the folks at Doyle's Public House, stepped up. And so what happens now, I guess, is the question, is now that we know that there's a business in Tacoma that decided not to work with us specifically for atheism reasons, the first thing that we do is we tell you about it. Anthem, they have a branch in Puyallup. They have a branch here in Tacoma, downtown next to the museum. Now that you know about it, if you're an atheist, you need to know that they don't believe in what you stand for and won't work with you. So please, you know, take your business, take your custom elsewhere. The other thing that we do, we don't know. We're still looking into stuff. We're still talking to, you know, the conversation with them isn't necessarily over. Just like when we had this is not Washington United for Marriage. This isn't like a public thing. This isn't what we had last time. It is a business. These folks are businessmen, you know, business people. They're men and women. They're not, you know, they're not a political organization. They're not an enormous corporation. They're just trying to get through the day, too.
And the Washington United for Marriage deal was a matter of a political coalition trying to establish marriage equality. And that's something that specifically is billing itself on inclusivity and whatnot. And it is a little bit different from a business enterprise.
It is.
Yeah.
So we're sort of exploring what our options are at this point. But I am a little, there is something that I do want to complain about, and it's not about the folks at Anthem. It's actually about the atheism movement in general. A lot of the folks who heard about this, I think, responded properly and said, well, if they're not going to do business with us, you know, we're not going to do business with them. That, you know, this is definitely discriminatory. Let's get the word out so people know about it. That happened. But there was also the second group of people who said that, they're allowed to do that. They're allowed to discriminate. So you guys just need to suck it up and do it. And I don't understand that at all. I really don't.
I imagine that they must not have looked deeply enough into what's happened, into the situation, to come to that conclusion, because it's, as we said earlier, it's different if they'd said up front, we don't agree with you, we're going to not do business with you.
Right.
That's discrimination, but they're allowed to do that as a business. I think as long as they don't state it really obviously.
Discrimination happens on the basis of lots of different protected classes in the United States.
We're not lawyers.
We aren't lawyers, but my understanding of it, there's lots of things that, you know, you can't discriminate in terms of delivering service on.
This isn't what I'm talking about. This is
right.
This, what I'm asking, I guess, the atheism community, and what I would like to hear from you about is, if I can't make a stand here, if I can't say, no, we will not be discriminated against on services, if this is, you know, this is clearly isn't Bangladesh, we're not being thrown in jail, we're not being tortured, but this is discrimination. If I don't make a stand here, tell me where. What's the threshold? Look at the situation. Look at my situation. Look at what we went through. Look at how clear we've been. You know, there were some questions with that situation with Camp Quest, Oklahoma, and the business that turned them down as to how much the business owner knew. That's questionable. I think I'm going to take Camp Quest Northwest side on it. But I can tell you in our Camp Quest Oklahoma,
right.
I can tell you in our case, the fact that we were atheists and the fact that we're activists and the fact that Shelley Siegel is an atheist performer was never hidden from these people. So I have a question for you who took the side, you, an atheist who took the side of Anthem in this. And there's a few of you. I want to know what your threshold is. I want you to look at my situation and say, what steps past this am I not allowed, you know, at what point am I allowed to speak up? At what point does this become an issue for the atheism community? Because if not here, then where? And you can talk about, you know, you can talk about how bad atheists have it in other countries. I actually probably at this point, given that I do a talk on blasphemy laws around the country, know maybe just as much or more than you do, but I need to know what the threshold is. So you can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the red button, let us know. You can give us a call, 253-584-1480, let us know. I want to know where your threshold is. I want to know, as a community, the decisions that we make regarding this. It's important to me.
Definitely. I mean, it's a tough thing to look at through all the different, you know, circumstances that happen when businesses say, no, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to have atheists patronizing my establishment. But,
yeah.
You know, where can we say, hey, we are normal human beings that can spend our money at coffee shops just like everyone else. And we actually are a vital part of the community.
I would, and that's what we hope to show today at the post show. So if you've never been to a post show today, this is the one to go to. So I'd like to do an email to sort of bring Shelley into the conversation. This is Almond from the Dominican Republic, and he writes, I love music, and I'm an atheist. I usually like the style of music of the Christian groups in my country, as rock bands are not my cup of tea. But of course, I don't share their beliefs, so I end up feeling like a hypocrite when I participate in one. I've also found that churches offer musical instrument classes way cheaper than secular musical academies do. I joined an atheist Facebook group in my country to see if I could find something in this regard with any success. Any advice? So I guess I'd ask you first, since you're the most connected to music than anybody here.
Well, I don't have any experience with atheist groups in the Dominican Republic, but I do know that in the United States and in Australia, they do have atheist music groups, mostly that's choirs or choruses, humanist choirs, and they will kind of sing material that has to do with humanist subjects, or even just to get together and participate in a shared music experience. And I think, yeah, that's a good idea to look at your local groups and see if they have anything going like that. And if they don't, maybe if you feel really strongly about it, you can start one yourself.
So, Shelley, you do participate in musical activities that have a religious flavor to them, right? And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I actually grew up in a Jewish, singing in a Jewish wedding band with my father. And so that's kind of how I learnt my skills. I learnt to sing, playing at bar mitzvahs and weddings. And yeah, I really enjoy being a part of a event that is really significant to people in people's lives. And I don't perform as much with them anymore because I'm mostly on tour doing my original music. But when I do go home, I do still sing at bar mitzvahs and weddings. And I guess more with the bar mitzvahs, I feel a little bit uncomfortable because the weddings, you know, that's, I think, is quite a secular thing. It's a civil thing as well these days. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have as much religion involved in the wedding reception, especially because it's playing mostly top 40 music and jazz and dance music. If it was a more religious wedding, I wouldn't actually be allowed to perform.
Right, because you being a woman.
Yeah, because Orthodox Jewish men are not allowed to hear a woman singing solo. So there's been some functions where I have to wait to a particular time for the men, for the religious men to leave, and then we can do the mixed dancing, and then I'm allowed on stage.
I would just find that wedding fascinating to attend, let alone perform in. That's strange. That's okay. Now all the Orthodox people are gone. Now we can really party and yeah. Break it down.
They actually have a curfew. It's like standard that they leave about 9:30.
Really?
Wow.
It's just covered courtesy so that the mixed dancing can begin.
Wow.
And it's disrespectful, and I think that may be unique to Australia, I don't know, but because they are such a small Jewish community there, it's kind of hard to isolate the different sects.
I grew up or I went to college with a Jewish classmate from North Dakota, and she said that there was, you know, one synagogue on the high holidays that everybody would come to, regardless of whether you were an Orthodox person, a secular Zionist, a gay and lesbian family, and everybody would come together because it's all of the Jews in North Dakota. So I kind of understand that.
Yeah.
All right, now the old people have gone, so now we can break it down with the dancing.
Was there anything like this in your experience, Becky?
I have never, you know, I don't have a large Jewish extended family in the United States, so I never experienced that kind of wedding where you would have... I never went to a wedding that would have the separate dancing. I mean, I've seen it in movies. I know about it. And, mm-hmm. you know, the bride and groom actually sort of dance over this divider by holding a tissue between them because you can't really even touch. And you have...
So is there a physical divider down the dance floor?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
I've how does that been to one of them.
Yeah, I wonder how that looks to the performer. I mean, who do you look at? What do you do? I mean, do you play different songs for different sides of the room?
I mean, in traditional Jewish weddings, also part of the tradition is that the community helps entertain the bride and groom with a lot of different things. So you might have like lots of just cousins and families and other people in the community that you know, perform plate spinning tricks, and then I'm going to sing a song, and
that I'm familiar with.
Yes,
in my family, it's not necessarily a religious thing, but it's performing at each other. Big events.
I thought specifically plate spinning, and I was excited.
Plate spinning, man. No, that looks hard, though. I wouldn't mind learning how to do that.
Yeah. So, but you know, you don't feel necessarily hypocritical if you're performing at a wedding, or
no, especially because I'm not really performing any religious rituals at all. It's more just, you know, here are two people celebrating the fact that they've chosen to dedicate their lives to each other and sharing that with family and friends. And mm-hmm. so I enjoy being a part of that regardless of whether they're religious or not. And I think that's kind of interesting with what we were talking about before with Anthem. I think there probably is some kind of ceremony in which I would start to feel uncomfortable performing music at and representing. And so I can understand.
Yeah.
That's where those atheists are.
Maybe so.
From.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to talk about early anthropogenic climate change and more about Shelley Siegel in a moment. Hey, everybody. This is Sam. It is the Monday after the episode. And I realized there's a couple things I didn't get to do in all of the technical stuff I was doing on Sunday. And the thing that I must do is I'd like to thank everybody who participated in Peggy's challenge. I'd like to thank Thomas from Morrison, Colorado, Thomas from Brookline, Massachusetts, Gordon from San Mateo, California, and Scott from St. Louis, Missouri. Thanks to you guys, we can keep the lights on a little bit longer and continue to pay for the show. Thank you all. If you would like to participate in Peggy's challenge, you can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the shiny red candy-like button, and help us. Thank you again very much. The second thing that I need to talk about is much less positive. It's the Monday after the Shelley Siegel show and the Shelley Siegel concert. Something really bad has happened with the Boston Marathon. And if you're hearing about this from me, one, wow. Two, pause it, check out a news site, and then be cheered up by the music that's going to happen in the second part of this show. We don't know how. We don't know why. And this is the moment when skepticism can serve me best, is just to, you know, watch the evidence, keep my mind open, and don't make the assumptions that a lot of us are all making in our head. It's now's not the time. What it is the time for is helping. Figure out where the help is needed and apply it. Do what you can. I know that's what I'm going to be doing this week. And I'm not saying advertise it now, don't show up there and turn it into a big media event for the atheist community, but remember what you did, and if you could let me know if you've helped out, I would really appreciate it, because the next time some religious doof comes on the air and says that atheists weren't there in the country's time of need, we'll have proof. Don't go and say, I'm an atheist and I'm here to help. Just go. Help. And then later, we can talk about it. I'm sure we're going to talk about this more this week and in the coming weeks, but I wanted to get that out before the podcast went out. So that's it for the post-production messages. I hope you're all doing okay, and I'll talk to you on Sunday.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, knowledge night and no cover live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, or to get involved in the community forums. Dead Stars, now available on Amazon.
Da-da-da-da.
Billy!
Not again!
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert!
Wow, that's so credible!
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you, and to give me your lunch money!
Aw, anything for family! Here you go!
Wait, Billy! Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence! Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back! This is Ask an Atheist. Oh! 253-584-1480. And we were going to talk a little bit about anthropogenic climate change, or, you know, global warming, if you will. And there's a very interesting congressman. Texas Republican Representative Joe Barton cited the Old Testament to refute scientific evidence of man-made global warming, drawing on the story of Noah's Ark. I would point out that if you are a believer, he writes, I would point out that you are a believer in the Bible, one would have to say the Great Flood was an example of climate change, Barton told a congressional hearing on Wednesday in a video first shown on the BuzzFeed website. That certainly wasn't because of mankind had overdeveloped hydrocarbon energy. I don't deny that climate is changing, he said. I think you can have an honest difference of opinion about what's causing that change without automatically being either all in, that's all because of mankind, or it's all just natural. I think this is a divergence of evidence.
I love this kind of fallacy where you have this false middle, and it's so often, you know, portrayed by religious believers that say, oh, well, you know, either God created man, or it was, you know, or it was a freak sort of, a natural accident based on environmental pressures. So the truth must be somewhere in between. No, actually, it doesn't necessarily have to be in between.
Well, I've got one argument on it. Is that this doesn't make sense to me, even from a biblical perspective. Is now the flood of Noah stuff, that was in the way you call it, your Bible, right? That was
yes, the Hebrew scriptures.
Okay. Wasn't that flood an example of anthropogenic climate change? Because didn't God in this case flood the world because people stink?
People were misbehaving, people were acting up, and so yes, God decided to destroy with a flood. So are you saying that actually, even according to the Bible, global warming, global flood was man caused?
Even from a biblical perspective, I think this is a bad argument.
But now, God made man.
Well, that's the responsibility is clearly in that case. But when you get outside of that argument, what you have is a clear set of evidence. You can say there's a divergence of evidence, but this is just a new example of teaching the controversy. He's trying to suggest that this evidence exists that suggests that climate change is not caused by people. That really isn't there. That isn't really making it through. Isn't making it through peer review, isn't it making it through the scientific, you know, process.
What's awesome here is that a lot of climate change hoaxers will say things like, oh, they're going to pull up some funky science that sounds really scientific but is not really valid in order to try and say, look, there are scientists who say that it's not based on human activity. This guy doesn't even go that far. He just says, Bible.
Yeah, just Bible. I mean, that's more honest. It's way more honest than suggesting that there's these groups of scientists who know something about climate change who say that it's not happening, which really isn't true.
But, right.
Oh, well, I just like the idea that he's suggesting that the flood caused by man's sin was not caused by man. I like that. I have to admit there's something perversely interesting in using their own beliefs against those arguments like that. All right. Done with that.
Yes.
So, Shelly Siegel, you're again with us in the studio. You have a couple albums under your belt at this point. You've got an Atheist album, but most recently Little March, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So, tell us about those albums.
Little March is my latest release, and it's a jazz folk collaboration with a guitarist who's LA-based at the moment called Adam Levy.
Okay.
Yeah, we wrote most of the songs together, and he's an incredible guitarist, singer, songwriter. He played with Norah Jones for about 10 years and Tracy Chapman and Arnie DeFranco. Very exciting.
So would these be influences of yours?
Yeah, definitely. Arnie the most. But yeah, I really love Tracy Chapman and Norah Jones as well. And we just released that in Australia. I haven't really released it over here in the US yet.
Do you know when it's making it out this way yet?
Well, I'm going to put it up on Bandcamp in the next couple of days.
Okay.
But just trying to, I guess I'm still learning about the music industry here in the US and what are the best avenues to release an album here.
Yeah, it's it is completely opaque to me. I have no idea how it works. How did you get into sort of musical performance? What was the path that led you here?
So like I said earlier, I grew up in my father's Jewish wedding band.
Yeah.
And I've just been performing with them since I was about 11 years old and started writing music at the same time and started performing my original music when I was about 15. I've been doing it ever since.
So when did you start sort of writing your original tunes that have to deal with questioning religion and you know, talking about atheism?
Yeah, so my album before Little March is called An Atheist Album, and that's really the first time that I've dealt with those kind of themes and issues in music. And I started writing those songs probably when I was about 21, 22, so about 4 or 5 years ago now. And I had just kind of become an atheist, and I'd come back from traveling, and I started to get involved in secular activism. And so as a songwriter, I usually write about what I'm going through, the discussions that I'm having with people. And that was so much at the forefront of my consciousness and what I was doing. So I started to write about my experiences.
So so a lot of artists, you know, have songs, you know, occasionally that challenge religion or doctrine and things like that, but they would really shy away from using the A word, let alone creating an entire album called an atheist album. Mm. Did anyone advise you against doing so?
Yes, or? Definitely. Everybody said, not everybody, but a lot of friends and family were concerned that it's, you know, kind of shooting yourself in the foot, really, for the mainstream music world. And I disagree, and part of that is because of what I wanted to do with this album. It was the first time I'd really ever made like a concept album in a way. It was like, I want every song on the album to address an issue that I feel is pertinent to this overall theme. And I wanted to have the word atheist in it because I think it's important to normalize atheism and atheists, and to connect atheism with something positive like art, music, and creativity.
This is a thing. This is a problem I've been having with the atheism community. Is I'm really interested in music. I wouldn't call myself a musician, especially not with my family. But you know, I've wanted to see more musical, not necessarily atheist musical projects, but musical projects within the atheism community. I want to see, you know, more of an expression in art and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And this is why I think what you're doing is so important. But I guess the question to me is, how does it feel, you know, artistically? What's different between writing material, say, for Little March or you know, more a musical project versus writing material for a concept album like the Atheist album?
Well, it's not so different because you're in the headspace of what you're writing at that time and you're passionate about it in that way. It was uniquely challenging, an atheist album, in not so much like, normally my songs are about capturing a moment or a feeling or an experience that happened and kind of reflecting that in music. And I guess I was trying to do that same thing, but with more of a political statement and with more information than just a moment.
Right.
And so that was harder. And I enjoyed the challenge of that. And I'd really like to do it again. Like, I'm starting to write songs about feminism. So I think I'd like to do like a feminist themed album. And I'm writing songs about consciousness. I'd love to do a whole album that kind of explores that.
Consciousness in what respect?
In all different respects. I've got one song called The Collective Unconscious, which I wrote after reading a book about Jung and,
oh, okay,
and about projection and just all different, you know, the humanity's ability to delude themselves and the kind of constructions that we've built. And it seemed like the next like logical step to explore after losing my religion, because, you know, it's like, okay, I've realized this isn't true and there's a reality out there that exists and through science is, you know, at least almost accessible in some way, and I'm exploring that. And then, oh, now I know a bit more about myself and where I've come from, instead of being this being that has had, or of dust that's been blown into by the spirit of God. I am an animal and I have this animal mind, and it seems like an interesting thing to explore next.
It does seem like the logical next step. Like when we listen to Living After Faith, there's usually the, okay, I don't believe in God, then what?
Then what? And the it's the living part that comes next. So are there any particular stories or moments that were about religion or atheism that went into an atheist album? One particular song or?
Absolutely. And I think what it felt like with this album is it was a collection of moments and all kind of piling up. One song that's one of my favorites on the album is called Eve, and that talks about women in scripture, the way scripture and religion talk about women and women's roles in society. And there were so many moments that were piled into that song. A big part of that was my experience as a woman in Judaism, and what we were talking about before, you know, not being allowed to sing at certain situations, not being allowed in the Orthodox synagogue that I attended. I had quite a liberal upbringing, but the synagogue we went to was Orthodox, so the women, there's the gender segregation, the women sit upstairs, mm-hmm. and the women are not in any kind of leadership position. They're not allowed to run the services. And so my experience as a woman in growing up in that kind of community, and then also just from hearing other stories from other women. There was one YouTube video that I watched that was from a woman based here in the United States, and she was explaining why, according to scripture, women need to submit to their husbands and why they can't be teachers of men. And it was like, it really struck me and was stayed with me, because she was really a great teacher. She was, you know, using her mind and her language to teach other women, but instead of empowering them, which is what knowledge usually does, it she was keeping them in a state of submission. And then also another thing that came into that song was the way that I wrote it. It's written from a woman's perspective, and she's kind of listing these things that it's quite sarcastic in a way, but it also was reflective of the way that I hear a lot of women, especially in the community that I grew up in the Jewish community, explaining why these rules are not sexist, why they're correct, defending the laws that put them basically as second-class citizens.
You know, I experienced something kind of similar in a window into that sort of little world, because I went to a women's college, but it was a very, very liberal sort of student base in general. I was also very active in the Jewish community. And so we would have a lot of sort of pro-feminist, pro-women leadership sort of experiences. But then also I would occasionally attend Chabad, which is the ultra-Orthodox sort of community. And we would be separated, you know, for like Sabbath preparation and whatnot, and I would hear this huge dichotomy between these women that were not much older than I, but had their children, and they were referring, well, my husband said this, my husband does this, and it was all about like food preparation, and it was this real sort of sense of pride that, no, this is our role, and it's not sexist for us to be involved in the food preparation because we can do it the best, and we can align with all of the laws of being kosher, of kashrut. And then
is that the laws of being kosher?
Yeah, kashrut, yeah, kashrut, okay. is that, and then sort of contrast it to sort of the liberal feminist sort of Jewish Hillel group at my college, at Smith College, which was very different and constantly challenging that, and that sort of represented that little period of time in my life before I decided there's an emphasis that you can put on trying to sort of change the religion, but then when you have all of those trappings that created that structure to begin with, you can decide, do I want to change it, or do I just want to leave it and say, okay, that's enough, I don't need to.
I do have a question for the both of you, actually. Is one of the things that I've noticed differently between the Christian and the Jewish communities, and this is speaking strictly as an outside observer, I'm certain there will be many exceptions to this, is when, you know, a Christian sect splits off from another Christian sect, there's this tendency to say, no, everything they said is crap, forget it, we're starting over, we're sola scriptura, or we're bringing back, you know, transubstantiation or something like that. Where in the Jewish community, it seems like, you know, you've got Reform, you've got Conservative, you got the other groups, but there's sort of always this continual sense of paying at least lip service to the Orthodox Jews. Is that something that actually happens, or is this just something that I'm noticing?
I think it depends. I mean, I think like what Shelley, you were talking about with, all right, we'll have the gender segregated celebrations until 9 p.m. and then we'll party down. And that I have seen that in different contexts. Definitely in the state of Israel, you have these tensions between, do we allow bus service on the Sabbath and things like that.
I think they're just trying to be accommodating to each other, especially the more liberal communities, but right. It's the Orthodox communities that need the most accommodating because they have the strictest laws.
And I actually don't see much effort at accommodation for secularists or just other forms of you know, religious practice, even within Judaism, amongst the at least the ultra-Orthodox, the Haredim.
And I do feel like, just from my experience in interacting with Orthodox Jews, that it's not blanket. I'm sure there's people that feel otherwise, but just a sort of disdain for the reform and liberal community.
That I have noticed. So you used another word that I didn't quite get towards the end there.
Haredim. That's the ultra-Orthodox. That's the sort of the Hebrew designation, the Hebrew name. So
Shelley, you started out as a religious musician, and then you transitioned away from sort of being religious, but you kept the musician part.
Yeah.
Has your relationship with your family and other musicians, has that changed as you've gone along that path?
Not at all with other musicians that I could think of. Definitely it was an interesting and significant experience to go through becoming an atheist with my family. My father is the president of the synagogue that they attended in Melbourne. And it's, I mean, being Jewish was a really big part of my identity and is a really big part of my family's identity. Mm-hmm. So it was quite tense and there was quite a bit of friction for the first few years. But I'm really lucky in that I say my parents love me more than they love God, I think, because we've managed to talk through our differences and we've managed to find areas in which our worldviews converge. I guess I would say that my parents are both humanists. Mm. They both really care about their fellow humans and improving the lives of others. And I think that's why they're in religion in the first place. They got into it because they like community, they like people, they like a safe space for each other, and they like helping people, and that's really the motivation behind it. I think it is for a lot of people.
I think it's just so beautiful what you just said, that your parents love you more than they love God. And if we could just hear that, you know, and see it in action with so many people who, you know, leave religion and leave the religion of their parents, then it would be really wonderful. One of the things that we were talking about earlier is that, Shelley, you don't identify as being Jewish currently anymore. And that's something within, like, specific to the Jewish community, where you get sort of drilled into your head that no, Judaism is you know, being Jewish is about being a people. It's not necessarily a religion. It's more than a religion.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have people say, well, because your mother was Jewish, you're Jewish no matter what. We have listeners who are told that all the time.
Yeah.
How do you sort of encounter that, and how do you respond to that?
Well, I felt so Jewish for such a long time. I felt like it was such a big part of my identity, and I believed in a way that it was an ethnicity and nationality. I guess more an ethnicity than a nationality. But
I did notice in the first segment of the show, you identified with the community, and you said we, and then you said wait, they.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's you know, you've been conditioned. I feel that is the community I grow up in, and if I have to choose a culture that my upbringing is most aligned with, it would be a Jewish culture. But in the same way that calling myself an atheist is like, has a political goal behind it, it's the same that I like to say that I'm not Jewish anymore. It's not something that I identify with, because I'm making a statement that Judaism is based around a set of beliefs that I don't have anymore. And I want to separate myself from the tribalistic bloodline focus that Judaism tends to have. And how I respond to what Rebecca said, which is a really common argument, people say, oh, well, your mother was Jewish and therefore you're Jewish. Well, that is the ruling according to halakha, which is Jewish law. And I said, well, I don't believe in halakha anymore. That's why I'm not Jewish. So that argument really holds no weight with me.
We were just talking about that a couple of weeks ago, because like in the early days of our relationship, I'm not going to convert. I'm certainly not going to go through an Orthodox conversion just so that I can have the same culture as my family. But if we were to have kids, they would be Jewish, and technically I would not be.
Right.
And it's an interesting concept.
It is an interesting concept. You know, Shelley, one of the things that you said that was pretty provocative is, you know, identifying as Jewish means that you sort of align with the beliefs. And I've heard so many, and I've wrestled with this myself, saying that you can reject the beliefs but then maintain the sort of Jewish identity in terms of being a cultural Jew. But if part of the beliefs are really that you have this chosenness, you have this special bloodline, this ancient bloodline, then that really is part of the beliefs. And when you look at being a secular humanist and you try and reconcile that with being with being distinct and being separate, and that's a tough thing that I struggle with as well. And so sort of seeing that that is part of the belief system about this ethnicity, and I can reject that part, does that still make me Jewish? And that's one of the things I'm currently wrestling with.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's totally up to each person to make that decision. I think a big part of ethnicity is self-identification, and it's you putting yourself in that group and wanting to be a part of it, and that part of your identity being important to you. And I respect that. I have a lot of friends who, well, I respect their decision
right.
to call themselves that. They can't really tell me that I am Jewish, if I choose not to be. But I can't remember what I was going to say. I might come back to it later.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. It's about to get weird in here. We're going to try and do some live music, something we've never done before. But before that, we'll have a moment of science with Dan. See you soon.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences, and more. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's number one source of atheist videos.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, or to get involved in the community forums. Dead Stars, now available on Amazon.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince and I want to hide $1 billion in your locker.
Wow, $1 billion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal! Here you go!
Wait, Billy, just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist. And now Dan with a moment of science.
Thanks, Sam. Today I want to talk to you about statistical correlations. These are ways that we try to understand the relationships between two or more variables. If an increase in one variable in a study, let's say the height of a person, seems to line up with an increase in another variable, for example, the weight of a person, this is what's known as a positive correlation. So on average, taller people weigh more than shorter people. Increased height equals increased weight. In a negative correlation, the two variables have an opposite relationship. A good example of negative correlation might be the number of alcoholic beverages consumed versus score on a driving test. The more you drink, the worse you drive. Understanding correlations is very important for research. If we wanted to know, for instance, if a new drug is more effective at treating an illness than a placebo, we'd run some tests and see if the subjects given the drug were better off than those who got the placebo. That seems sound, right? Well, unfortunately, not every correlation is quite so straightforward. Many of them can be misleading, ridiculous, or even intentionally misused to promote an agenda. A fantastic phrase to keep in mind, overused though it may be, is correlation does not imply causation. Just because two things are correlated doesn't mean one causes the other. Let's look at a few examples. First off, in numerous American cities, ice cream sales are positively correlated with numbers of homicides. The more ice cream that is sold, the more murders are committed. Or so it would appear. In fact, these two variables do not have a causal relationship. One is not causing the other. It's not that the sugar rush of ice cream inspires people to murder, nor is it that families grieving for their lost loved ones seek solace in a bowl of Ben and Jerry's. The real issue here is summertime. Both ice cream sales and murders increase in the longer days, higher temperatures, and increased activity of summer. There's also a positive correlation between the number of diagnosed cases of autism and the amount of organic groceries sold. Does this mean that organic groceries cause autism? No, of course not. And neither does it mean that persons with autism prefer organic products. It simply means that our ability to better diagnose disorders on the autism spectrum happened to increase dramatically during the same period that organic produce became trendy. Once again, there is no causal relationship. But how about another one? Data collected by Dave Gilson of Mother Jones from Public Policy Polling and the Pew Research Center shows that there is a very strong correlation between eating sushi and approving of gay marriage. Seriously! Now, would you say that eating sushi causes a person to approve of gay marriage, or that approving of gay marriage makes you crave sushi? By now, I hope not. There are several factors that influence this one, such as urban versus rural areas and political ideologies, but most important here is the age demographic. On average, younger people are more likely to both try sushi and approve of gay marriage. On average. That on average is very important here. The data does not suggest in any way that all sushi eaters are young and socially progressive, nor does it imply that all sushi haters are geriatric homophobes. So please, please don't send that rage mail just yet. And remember that if you sit in liquid nitrogen from the waist down and set your torso on fire, you'll still be maintaining average body temperature. So the next time someone tries to tell you that lizards repel polar bears, or that global warming is caused by a lack of maritime piracy, or even that men with huge feet have huge hearts, you'll know what to say before planning your next Arctic reptile dating cruise. I'm Dan Lombardo, and I hope you enjoyed this moment of science.
Thank you very much, Dan. And this is, we're in a different room with a different mixer set up. This is it's going to be weird, but how you doing, Chili?
Good,
all dude. Right. Great. So, one of the things we did on the way here, which surprised me a little bit, is you just started singing Wind Up Working in a Gas Station from Zootalores. And I am known to have kind of ridiculous musical tastes, like Frank Zappa. I love Frank Zappa.
Yeah, me too.
And stuff like that. So it was just like, it just made my day to have somebody else start singing Wind Up Working in a Gas.
It pretty much made mine for someone to like recognize that song. Cause it's a pretty cool song, and I've sung it many a time when at a gas station.
Like, pretty much.
Nobody ever gets it.
I considered it a bit of a theme song for a while, because it was either, you know, this or computers or Wind Up Working at a Gas Station. So, right. We have a guitar. We have a microphone. What would you like to do?
Well, I thought it might be cool to play the song that I was talking to you guys about before, about women in scripture.
By all means.
So this is called Eve. And for once, I don't have to give a really long intro because I already gave it.
Yep.
Bible tells me I was made for and from man, and I must do for him everything that I can. I must surrender to his will, yeah, I must submit. I can't make the household decisions, cause I am unfit. It tells me my place with everlasting grace. Bible tells me I must be silent, she can't hear my voice. My role has been divinely defined, and I have no other choice. I may not be a teacher of man, I must cover up my shame. These are the laws of the one who in vain I cannot name. He tells me my place with everlasting grace. And my punishment for wanting to learn is a painful birth from which I may not return. Bible tells me that I am unclean, I am impure, you cannot touch me, and it has nothing to do with where I've been. It is part of who I am, it is because I corrupt man. I was asking for it just by being a woman. He tells me my place with everlasting grace. It's a painful birth from which I may not return. The Bible tells me I was made for and from man, and I must do for him everything that I can. I must surrender to his will, yeah, I must submit. I can't make the household decisions, 'cause I am unfit. It tells me my place with everlasting grace. Yeah, it tells me my place with everlasting grace.
So do I clap? Because I'd totally clap.
Yeah.
So if that's what you're, if you want to hear more of this in about, oh, I don't know, an hour and a half at 5 o'clock, we will be at Doyle's Public House in downtown Tacoma. And she'll be doing a concert. We could talk about this, talk about the interview, talk about anything for some food, for some drinks. So we talked about Frank Zappa. Mm-hmm. What are some of your other musical influences?
I guess we also mentioned Ani earlier.
We did,
when we were talking about Adam. So yeah, Ani DiFranco is easily one of my biggest influences, and I just love the way that she puts her politics and her ideology and basically her thoughts on how she wants the world to be in her music, and it's motivating, it's encouraging, and that's what I love about music. So it's,
well, I think there's something
goal for me too.
There's something to be said for that. Is music? One of the things that's different for me about music versus, say, what I do with Ask an Atheist is all I can do is really speak to the logic of it all. You know, I have to speak in terms of logic and arguments, and if I get into the emotionality, it doesn't really reach people the same way because we've got because we have defenses for it. And what music is really good, I think, at doing is not necessarily making people feel things, but being a direct communicator of emotion. This is how somebody else feels.
Mm.
And I guess, I don't know, I'm just kind of...
Yeah, absolutely. It can even be an emotional way to put a logical argument.
Yes, yeah.
And music is so connected to our emotions, and we naturally have an emotive response to music. So I think you're right. And I say sometimes, like, I can use my song as a 4-minute argument and no one's going to interrupt me because it's a song, and I can get my point across and say everything I need to say without being interrupted.
And it also goes a long way to saying that, because when people talk about atheists and they talk about the modern atheism visibility movement, they tend to talk in terms of the arguments that we make, the yelling that we do, the screaming that we do, and a lot of people make equations of of atheists to Vulcans and Star Trek or something like that, where we're completely emotionless beings, and that's really far from the truth, and this is a great way of showing not just you know, showing some of the emotions beyond just anger and pain, I think. And, I get weird when I talk about music. What do you think?
I think that's part of what I was saying before as well. Like, yeah. I want atheism to be attached to something creative, like art and music. And I think that, well, obviously I think that atheists have feelings like everybody else. Right. A lot of the time, a lot of atheists have come out of religious communities.
Yes.
And I think we share so many parallels with religiously minded people. Well, we're all human, but I mean, we all feel, we all have transcendent moments. We all experience these moments of awe where we're moved by the world around us and by our relationships and by music. I think we can share that experience. And that's also what you said before. I think it's a good way for me to get an atheist perspective across to somebody that may not be able to find the arguments accessible through debate. Whereas, you know, it's like someone can say, okay, maybe I don't agree with you, but I can see your perspective in the way that you're presenting it.
So we have about 4 minutes. Would you like to do one more song?
Sure.
All right. What do you got?
Well,
And this is Ask an Atheist, by the way.
Yeah. Thanks so much, guys, on Ask an Atheist, Sam and Rebecca, for having me.
It's been a
real pleasure. So this song is called My Morality, and it's one of those four-minute opinion pieces.
All right. Here we go.
In response to the conversation of how atheists don't know the difference between what's right and wrong. My morality has nothing to do with the Bible. Verses of the Quran. My morality won't judge you by your spirituality, but by the things that you have done. My morality is not set into stone tablets who don't even tell you not to hurt children. My morality is not dictated by a deity. It's developed from empathy, dependence, and love. My morality accepts everybody's sexuality. It's more concerned with inequality than validations from above. My morality is not set into stone tablets who don't even tell you worthwhile to be good for being good own sake. And not to think for yourself can be a deadly mistake. My morality is not recitable from memory. It's something inside of me, how I want to be, treat others how I want them to treat. Basically, not to hurt anybody or pause any brutality. It stems from our common humanity, and it's what my mother taught to me. And it's mine because I'm free.
Thank you very much. And I think that's all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam Ulvey. With me was Rebecca Friedman. Thank you very much, Shelley Siegel. Dan Lombardo was my production assistant. He also did Moment of Science. Music, is, as usual, is by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield. Post show is at Doyle's Public House at 5 p.m., 208 St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. Ask an Atheist is available at askanatheist.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 206-420-0997 or email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. See you guys next week.